Hey, I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. The U.S. Department of Education will soon be a shadow of its former self. A massive round of layoffs last week, combined with resignations and early retirements, leaves the department with some 2,200 staffers, compared to the 4,100 that worked there at the start of this year. The education world is reeling. What exactly does this mean for civil rights enforcement, education research, and federal student aid? And are more changes to come? President Donald Trump wants to see the agency completely dismantled, though that would take an act of Congress. This hour, we're going to look at how these historic cuts could affect individual states, particularly Vermont, whose education system is already in the midst of its own period of transformation. We'll talk with the chair of the state's Senate Education Committee, and then with Vermont's newly confirmed Secretary of Education, Zoe Saunders. But first, for a big picture perspective, we are joined by Christina Samuels. She's a reporter for the Hechinger Report, which is a national nonprofit news organization that's focused on education. She joins us today from Silver Spring, Maryland. Christina, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you with us today. So as you know, Christina, an individual kid's experience in an individual classroom is shaped by so many different forces, which include but are certainly not limited to the federal government. Can you tell us broadly here, what does the U.S. Department of Education do? What is it in charge of when it comes to educating Americans?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the main things that the Department of Education does, one of its biggest roles is overseeing student loans and Pell Grants and other types of college financing options. So that's a big part of its work, and that's also a big part of the number of people who were laid off in this past week. Another thing that it does, and this is speaking more in the K-12 realm, is it helps pay for money that goes to schools that have high numbers of low-income students. That money is Title I money. It also administers the rules and distributes some money for students with disabilities. And it does other activities like investigate complaints that parents may have about what might be happening in their school or their school district. And then finally, it also does a tremendous amount of research. It pays for research, and it also does research itself in best ways to educate students. And so all of those activities were cut in these last actions of this past week.
Okay. And then help us connect here the dots between all of that work going on at the federal level and then a state level agency of education like Vermont's. Do we apply for funding for some of these programs from the Department of Education? How does that work?
Sure. Some of those programs, there's the largest numbers of those programs are released by a formula. So the formulas are kind of complicated. They have to do with how many students you have and students in poverty and students with disabilities, et cetera. But it's not applied. It is, you know, you look at the demographics of the state in question, and that is how that money is parceled out. Hmm. There are also then some competitive grants. For example, if you, in some past years, the Department of Education has had grants to like improve early childhood programs. For example, and those were competitive grants. But a lot of the money is rolled out by formula.
Hmm. Okay, so the staffing cuts, as you said, seem to be hitting a couple parts of the DOE particularly hard. Let's start with the Office of Civil Rights. How does a diminishment of that office get felt on the ground in a state like Vermont?
Sure. Well, the Office for Civil Rights would be the entity, the people who would take complaints from parents who are saying, for example, my child has been discriminated against because of his or her disability, because of his or her gender, because of his or her race. The department will take those complaints, investigate them, and if they found and if they're founded, they will usually come to some agreement with the district to address this, with the idea that if this is a problem for this one family, then this is something that could be happening to other families that are similarly situated. Right now, those investigators are gone. We've heard some stories of people who have said, investigators who have said, they don't have the ability even to tell the parents that they aren't there anymore. So they're seeing emails come and they aren't able to respond to emails, or they don't have access to their laptops or work computers anymore. So those investigations, at least for now, are on hold or maybe even completely ended. I think we'll have to see how it plays out. But yes, that's the kind of disruption that's being seen in that office.
I also noticed through a really comprehensive article that the Hechinger Report published about Project 2025, the playbook that the Trump administration has largely been following since President Trump was inaugurated in late January. There was a breakdown of different ways in which Project 2025 could affect education. And one of the things that it said was that it advocates a rollback of regulations that protect people from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And it calls for agencies to focus their enforcement of sex discrimination laws on the biological binary meaning of sex. How could this trickle down into, I guess, both civil rights cases that the Department of Education handles, as well as possibly curriculum? Is that possible?
Well, so there's two interesting things. One is that was actually one of the first things that the Trump administration did. If you recall, that there were some executive orders that were released probably like the day that President Trump was inaugurated. He was signing some executive orders about this. The way that it's played out in terms of civil rights enforcement is that people who have said that they are being discriminated against because of the LGBTQ status, those investigations aren't really going anywhere right now. The department has said that it will continue to investigate complaints of discrimination based on disability status, but race and sexual orientation are not being investigated right now. And I think it still is yet to be determined what's going to happen with complaints that are already in the pipeline, whether they're just going to be ended or whether, you know, how will they continue? I don't think we know. In terms of curriculum, so the department doesn't have necessarily a direct role in, for example, Vermont's textbooks. But when it says that certain kinds of ideology are not going to be accepted, I think that a lot of school districts and a lot of school leaders are responding to that. They're worried that if they have these if certain curricula in their classrooms, that they might be subject to complaints. And the department has shown that even though it is cutting down investigations in some area, it has announced that it is definitely continuing investigations in others. For example, it's going to be investigating the Denver school system because of an all-gender bathroom that is in, I believe, one high school there, maybe more than one high school. But yeah, so there's not that direct activity that the department can do, but I certainly think it's signaling where its priorities lie.
Okay. And yeah, maybe another priority might be, or it seems to be, addressing accusations of anti-Semitism, particularly on college campuses. Here in Vermont, Middlebury College is among 60 higher education institutions to receive a letter from the Department of Education with concerns about anti-Semitism and warnings of, quote, enforcement action. So it's not necessarily that the department is trying to curb all of its civil rights work. It's redirecting its focus to a couple areas. Does that seem possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially in terms of accusations of anti-Semitism, Columbia University, and I should mention that the Hechinger Report is an independent unit of Teachers College, and Teachers College is an independent unit of Columbia University. But Columbia University has taken gotten a lot of attention from the administration, and actually has had $400 million of funds pulled back from the federal government because they say that the university has not done an adequate job of addressing anti-Semitism on campus. So I think that universities that are coming under scrutiny for that need to be really aware that the administration is taking a very aggressive role in this area.
Hmm. And on the topic of higher education, the federal government provides a lot of money to programs that help low and middle income people pay for college. I remember in Project 2025, it said that there weren't calls to cut Pell Grants, which go to generally to lowest income people who are applying for federal aid. But it did call for cuts to some other types of grants, as well as like the way that student loans are managed by the federal government. Do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of people who have student loans have a lot of questions right now. Unfortunately, some of the questions that they might have are not able to be answered because there's nobody at the department. The people who were at the department who would be tasked to do some of that customer service outward facing work are not in those roles anymore. But the administration has said that it's looking into ending certain public service loan programs and making it kind of restoring some payment programs that have been held in pause during the Biden administration. So a lot of people are starting to see their student loan payments start up again. So yeah, there's definitely that work going on as well.
Mm, okay. And then from higher education, let's go all the way down to the youngest children on this ladder. I want to focus on Head Start here. It's a childcare program that serves more than 800,000 low-income children every year across the country. Do any of these cuts affect Head Start programs?
So interestingly enough, Head Start is actually not a part of the Department of Education. It's actually housed over in Health and Human Services. And some of the money when the administration came in and immediately was stopping some grants, Head Start was being affected by that. The administration has said that it has released those funds, but I believe Head Start programs are still saying that they're having trouble drawing down some of the funding that they're supposed to be getting. There's been layoffs or firings at the Office of Head Start. Just notably, Project 2025 actually calls for Head Start to be abolished. So we're definitely keeping an eye on that as well. The administration has been following Project 2025 pretty closely thus far. And so I think it's safe to say that that would be another area to keep an eye on very closely.
Mm. And here in Vermont, a quarter of the children enrolled in Vermont Head Start programs have a developmental disability or delay. And the seven Vermont Head Start agencies here employ more than 450 people. And that includes everyone from teachers to family advocates, cooks, maintenance workers, a whole host of folks. There is so much change going on, Christina. I can't imagine trying to keep track of it, but I know you and other colleagues at the Hechinger Report are laser focused on these historic changes at the Department of Education. For you personally, what threads are you going to be trying to untangle in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, thank you so much for that. We are starting the ninth week of the administration, and it certainly has been nonstop since Inauguration Day. I think one of the things that we're trying to do really is try to see how all these changes play out with real people. And by the way, I mean real people. There are real people working at the Department of Education, of course, who now are not employed, and there's definitely the human stories to be told there. But I think that, you know, while everybody has their eyes focused on Washington, one thing that we're trying to remember is that education does really happen at the state level. It is primarily state and locally funded. And so while all these sort of dramatic changes are happening in Washington, we want to know what is happening in school districts in Vermont or in other states, what is happening with state departments of education, because that's where people are really going to start feeling it. When you say that, you know, however many people, thousands of people are cut from the Department of Education, that might not be meaningful until a state is trying to draw down funds or find out what happened to a competitive grant or get a question answered, and there is nobody there to answer that question. So those are the stories that we're going to be trying to track down in the weeks and months to come.
All right, I better let you get back to work, Christina. Christina Samuels is a reporter for the Hechinger Report. It's a national nonprofit news organization that is focused on education. Christina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Our next guest is the chair of the Vermont Senate's Committee on Education. Seth Bongartz of Manchester is a Democrat representing the Bennington Senate District. Senator, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you see as the biggest local impact of these federal cuts at the Department of Education?
Well, it's important to, number one, it's chaos, and we actually don't know what's happening when or to what degree. But we did take testimony last week from the agency to the effect that in large measure, because of the way the budget cycle works at the federal level, October, we are kind of okay. We may be kind of okay through this year and next year. The question is, what happens after that? And by the way, even saying that, it doesn't mean that there are not going to be, you know, because what's happening seems to be so arbitrary and chaotic, it's really hard to know what is going to hit us when.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny kind of chaos, it seems, because it was, you know, in a way premeditated by Project 2025. We could see some of these changes coming. And the Trump administration has been following that playbook pretty closely. So at the start of this legislative session in January, were you and your colleagues already preparing for some of these eventualities, or did it come as a surprise that the administration actually followed through?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And I will say that, you know, the reality is that the education committees have been largely focused on the, you know, the governor's plan for you know, changing the governance structure and how we fund.
Yes, which we will get to in just a moment.
Yes, yeah.
So that's been largely the focus, is what you're saying. There wasn't a lot of time to kind of prepare for what's going on at the federal level.
Yeah, and partially because we didn't really know, and we, in a way, we still don't, what's going to happen when, because it is chaotic.
So on that note, we got an email from a listener named Jill who writes, I am concerned about the loss of payments to local school staff like speech and language pathologists and special ed teachers in schools and other services, and how this may impact the availability of services that children with IEPs will be entitled to. So, Senator Bongartz, are you saying it's still too early to know whether or not there are actually going to be losses of federal funding for that type of programming that Jill is focused on?
I think we can probably count on some degree of loss of that federal funding, but I think it's going to be a little while getting here. It's not going to happen. It's not going to hit us with our this school year, or maybe even most of the next school year, as I understand it from what we heard from the Department of Education. But what all that means is we may have a little bit more time to prepare.
Okay.
The cuts coming in Title I for low districts with a high low income census, the Title II money for special ed, you know, everything to summer programs, you name it, everything is at risk, and it really has the potential to sow unbelievable chaos and actually almost like disaster for many of our school systems.
Well, we also got an email from a listener named Britt who writes, "The Department of Education has failed in its core mission. The department is an unnecessary layer of administration that diverts vast sums of taxpayer money away from classrooms and into inefficiency. Nearly all of its functions could be managed more efficiently by other agencies, allowing more resources to flow directly to states and local communities where education is best administered." So Britt's point here actually helps me transition to talk about these the plan to transform Vermont's education funding system as well as education administration here. And I want to quote to you a line from Senator Scott Beck, who's the Senate Minority Leader. He released a statement yesterday with his thoughts on education reform. And in it, he said that Vermont's Agency of Education doesn't have the resources and the staffing necessary to lead Vermont through a transformation process of this magnitude. Vermont's legislature must make sure that AOE is resourced so that Vermont gets this transformation right. So, Senator, my question for you is, as we see the federal government cutting its education department, should Vermont grow its own?
It's hard to... A lot of what happens at the federal level is going to be its own set of issues, and it could likely require us to try to find a way to backfill some of what's being cut. And the only way for us to do that is for our system to position our system to be as effective as it can be, cost efficient while providing a high quality education. Senator Beck, I think, is not talking about huge numbers of people. I think it's a handful of people positioned to help with the transition once we get that mechanism in place. And part of it can also be reallocation within the agency. So I don't think, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not just one versus the other, or because that's happening, we can't do what we need to do. We need to have, if we're going to transform the system, we are going to have the right staffing in place to do it.
As we've mentioned, this legislative session, Governor Phil Scott has introduced this education transformation plan. And one of the key elements of it is that it would consolidate the state's 100-plus school districts down to just 5. Do you support that idea?
No, let me back up. Partially, yes. I mean, the idea of instead of 52 SUs in 119 districts going to a lot fewer makes sense, and I think everybody I've talked to think it makes sense to do that. I think 5, especially the one up in Chittenden County, is way too big. The districts are too big, so I think we're going to end up with more like 9, 10, 11, 12 districts, I suspect.
And there was also a plan, or part of the plan was to completely transform education funding. There's so much to bite off here. So let's, if you'll allow me, to just focus on public tuition used for independent schools. That's come up a lot. It's been controversial. In that area, what type of transformation do you think is needed?
Well, not much. Number one, it's a tiny percentage of the whole. For all the attention it gets, we have about 4% of our kids in a tuitioning system. It's not what's driving costs, and it's not what's really driving anything. It's a distraction. The real issue is the 96% and how we make that larger system and have this within it, with the tuitioning system within it, function at a high level. So, I mean, I think it's really, my answer is it's a distraction from the real issue.
Governor Phil Scott has also put a target on this $18 million universal school meals program, which provides free school meals for kids regardless of income. Do you think that program should stay afloat? It used to be paid for by the federal government, but now it's paid for by the state.
If your question is universal school meals,
yeah.
I think the universal school meals program is here to stay. And I think it's every educator I've talked to about universal school meals and it's really been kind of surprising to me. They've almost all used the same language, game changer. And there's no, it is part of our landscape now, and it's much more complicated than saying how much it costs is actually a much more complicated question than, you know, throwing out a given number, because some districts were already doing it and everybody else was paying for it. And so, but I think if you're, the
but
short
isn't
answer,
it, there, there's like a set amount that the state pays for, right? Like the, yes. There's a clear number there.
Yes, there is. But it's not going, it's part of the landscape now. It's not going to go anywhere.
Well, you sound very sure.
Well, I think that, I think within the legislature, there is very deep support for the school meals program.
Okay.
And I really think it would take really something dramatic to change that.
Hmm. Well, speaking of changes in support in Vermont's legislature, we are about to be joined by Vermont's newly confirmed Education Secretary, Zoe Saunders. Last year, as you well know, Democrats voted down her appointment in part because of her experience working with charter schools in Florida and limited public school experience. She was confirmed last week, and you voted for her this year now that you're in the Senate instead of the House. Why did you vote for her?
I think she's eminently qualified. The part about the, you know, charter schools ignored what she was actually doing and the experience she gained doing that. But the other part is when people keep saying she has limited public school experience, she actually had 5 years in the Fort Lauderdale public school system right before she came to Vermont. So I think she's got a wealth of experience. And, you know, the question really should be, the starting point is that any governor has the right to appoint the people they want. The job of the Senate is only to say, are they qualified, or is there something that's about them that's so egregious that we just can't approve them? It's not our job to second guess. Once we start going down that street, it becomes a very slippery slope, and it affects both parties depending on who's in power. So I'm of the old school, I guess, that I believe the governor has a right to appoint who they want. But I also think in this instance, I had zero problem voting for Zoe Saunders. I think she has, A, deep experience, and B, during the last year that she's been acting secretary/secretary of our agency, she's demonstrated to me and to my committee, as we talked to her and went through her confirmation process, a real desire to make the Vermont school system an example of excellence and for all kids. She convinced us of that. She's convinced me of that. That that's her goal. And whether, you know, as I said on the Senate floor, there's parts of what she's proposing that I don't support, I don't like, and a lot of other people said the same thing. But she's trying to drive change. She's trying to drive change at a time we need change in the system. Because right now, if we don't do something, we're in an era of cuts. We managed to lower school budgets this year only through cuts, and the same thing is going to have to happen next year and the year after that. And so we need the change. She's driving it. She's made a bold. She's making a real proposal. And now it's the job of the Senate and the House to really pull that apart and decide how we want to go forward.
Hmm. And lastly, Senator Bongartz, you chair the Senate Committee on Education. How would you rate the level of collaboration this legislative session between your colleagues in the Senate and the Scott administration when it comes to transforming the education system here?
It's, you know, we have 30 individuals in the Senate. And, you know, some of them are sort of looking at things one way and some at another. But what I will say, and the question I thought you were going to ask is about cooperation between the Republicans and the Democrats, which is almost the same question. And I think it's really been so far pretty good. And there's going to be times when obviously the Democrats are going to disagree with the governor and Republicans and we'll have some fights. But, you know, it's been we've been able to get a couple things done in different committees that have required bipartisan support. And so, you know, that's a good sign.
We're talking schools here, so give me a letter grade. We talking B+, A-, pass, fail?
No, I think it's been on the high side. I don't know. Yeah, I'll give you a B.
I'm kidding.
A B plus. Yeah.
Senator Seth Bongartz of Manchester is the chair of Vermont's Senate Education Committee. Senator Bongartz, thank you so much for taking time out of your day today to talk with us.
Okay, thank you.
Historic cuts at the U.S. Department of Education are happening at the same time that Vermont's elected and appointed officials are trying to revamp the state's education funding formula and streamline the way that local schools are administered. Spearheading those efforts is Zoe Saunders, Vermont's Secretary of Education. The Senate just voted to confirm her last week. Secretary Saunders, welcome back to the program.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you with us today. And before we get to Vermont's efforts to transform its education system, let's focus on this gutting of the U.S. Department of Education. The words I have been hearing the most here are chaos and uncertainty. Is that how you feel as well?
Yes, the changes certainly have created a tremendous amount of uncertainty, creating a lot of questions and fear. A lot of what our role has been at the Agency of Education is first, we're seeking not to create more fear or anxiety. And second, we're working really diligently to provide actionable guidance after we evaluate the different directions coming from Washington, D.C., so that we can support our schools. You did note the reduction in force. It's yet to be determined exactly how that will impact Vermont, but it has been a significant reduction. In January, the department stated that its workforce stood about 4,000 workers, and after the recent reduction in force and voluntary separation opportunities, U.S. Ed said its workforce will be at roughly about 2,000. So we're looking at about a 50% reduction in force. And we recently received a letter from the U.S. Ed that provided more details around where that reduction of force is occurring and which offices are staying largely intact. And that's giving us a better sense of where the potential impacts might be as we look at changes and impacts on Vermont schools.
Hmm. Could you give us a little bit of insight from that letter? Are there certain areas that are going to be impacted heavily that you're concerned about?
Yeah, so there's two areas that appear to be impacted significantly, which is the Office of Civil Rights and also the research arm of U.S. Ed. So as we think about the Office of Civil Rights, that certainly plays an important role in protecting students with disabilities above and beyond the protections that are built in at the state level. And then regarding to a reduction in the research staff, that could have an impact on our ability as a country to really evaluate overall performance. And in Vermont, for us to compare how our students are performing to other states so that we can really learn from those best practices in other states to continue to improve our learning opportunities in Vermont. We do know that the Office of Special Education has not been impacted by the reduction in force, so that is promising as it is related to a goal of continuing to support students with disabilities. The letter indicated that a lot of the reduction is related to more of the administrative and clerical work and trying to really remove redundancies and duplication of effort. There's also a number of employees that oversee the drawdown of COVID relief dollars who have either taken advantage of the voluntary option to be removed from the department or have been let go. And so that we do expect will impact the timing of drawing down on what we call late liquidation of those COVID relief dollars until they're able to realign that workload with others in the department. And we've already communicated to the field that we do expect a delay in the drawdown of our title program allocations, which states usually receive in the spring. And that has happened before in the past. So we have protocols at the Agency of Education to navigate that now that we know the resolution has been passed and we have an understanding of the budget and the amount that will be available for the next academic year.
Mm. Well, let's hone in on all the work that's going on at the state level to reimagine how our education system could be administered and paid for. Governor Scott's education plan would consolidate the more than 100 school districts in Vermont down to just 5. And as we just heard Senator Seth Bongartz say, who's the chair of the Senate Education Committee, some people, him included, think it should be more like 9, 10, 11, 12 districts. Why do you think 5 is the right amount? And what difference does it make?
Yes. Thank you for the question. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation around how best to organize our districts in this future state. And our intention, as we proposed the 5, was to really think about how we could best pool resources to support teachers and to be able to achieve the other objectives that we outlined, which included increasing teacher pay. It included offering a range of electives for students, expanding college and career readiness, supporting with tutoring and after school, and also making sure that our superintendents had access to a number of specialized resources to best support our schools. We outlined a number of objectives, and we did not come to the 5-district model by accident. It really followed a methodical process where we evaluated the impact and really what we could achieve at that scale with the funding amount proposed. The proposal is very comprehensive, and it does take into consideration the interplay between funding, governance, and education quality. And in that initial proposal, we felt like the 5-district model met those objectives. We are aware that there's other alternatives that are being proposed, and the governor has mentioned on multiple occasions that we're open to looking at different district configurations. We have developed a rubric to help us evaluate the degree to which other configurations can still help to meet those objectives, and there might be additional objectives that the legislature identifies as they're considering different lines to draw. But I'll just reinforce that we're a very willing and active collaborator in this work with the legislature and are very willing to explore other district configurations that achieve our shared goals. And ultimately, what we're looking to achieve is a system that's expanding educational opportunities for our students, is promoting equity, and is sustainable over time so that that will really strengthen our system and give our kids the best world-class education we can provide with a rate that taxpayers can afford.
We're talking right now with Zoe Saunders, Vermont Secretary of Education. She was just commenting on the Scott Administration and Agency of Education's plan to consolidate school districts in Vermont. We have a call from Rob in Lincoln. Rob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon. The Institution of Public Education, in my view, is under attack not only at the federal level, but also here at the state. And one of the ways that it's happening through the Scott plan, or the Scott Saunders plan, is this idea that there are public schools that are small by necessity and those that are also small by choice. I'm a school board member, and there's no way that we can choose to be small in the sense of as a public school. The institution, we have to allow every student that lives in our district a seat at the table and provide them the resources that they need to reach their peak level of performance. And so I think that sentiment by the secretary and the governor, along with the fact that their plan was highly praised by the Americans for Prosperity, which is a Koch brother institution, with a long roadmap of trying to dismantle public education. And we should be naive to not think that this is also happening here within our own state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robin. If I'm hearing correctly, I hear maybe a future Vermont student there with you. Sounds like you're calling in with a young one. All right. So Rob is saying, Secretary Saunders, that he's gotten the sense that you and the governor believe that some schools are small by necessity and some are small by choice. And he disagrees with that. Is that how you feel?
So as part of this entire proposal, it's about how do we strengthen our public schools? And when we toured the entire state, we heard from a lot of Vermonters, and we certainly heard a preference for smaller elementary schools and being more local, but looking at larger middle and high schools to offer a broader array of programs and electives and sports and enrichment opportunities. And so when we're talking about developing the overall education portfolio, the recommendation is beginning to identify clear criteria to ensure that we are having every child a seat at the table, that they're getting access to an exceptional education in Vermont, and that we are supportive of that. I think there's a misconception around the plan that it's really about closing schools. What we're talking about is there's different ways to operate schools to really achieve that efficiency. And we've seen some incredible small schools in rural areas that are doing just that. And we've provided some strategies also through the budgeting process to be able to identify those best practices of how you can operate a smaller school and see really great opportunities for your students. Ultimately, what we're talking about is how do we really develop a education system, of a school portfolio that we can ensure every child is getting those opportunities. When we look across the state, we see that there's a lot of difference in terms of how we fund students in terms of per pupil funding. And what that means in practice is some of our higher needs communities are funding education at a lower level, and yet the needs of those students are greater. And what we're looking to do within this proposal is to make sure that students who have similar needs receive similar resources, and that those students who need extra help benefit from that extra help. And so being able to do that in a way that ensures we have a generous base funding amount with adjustments based on need, that we're aligning to the right governance structure, and that the schools are resourced to provide those services. So we see this as a really incredible opportunity to rebuild and strengthen our public education system. And this plan also calls for a reduction in the number of independent schools that would be eligible for public dollars, and thinking about intentionally how those schools would operate within the education ecosystem based on the district's determination around how to the needs of their student population.
Well, on that note, we got an email from Larry who writes, I would have no problem with public funding going to private for-profit institutions if said private schools were required to meet the same standards as the public schools are. If they could still make a profit based on a level playing field, so be it. But I doubt that business model would pan out. Do you believe that for-profit education institutions in Vermont are currently being held to the same standards as public schools?
So there's the current state of the State Board of Education rules ensures that schools receiving public dollars are not discriminating, and also that they are adhering to a number of the education quality standards outlined. What this proposal puts forward, Governor Scott's proposal, is to really increase the shared accountability. And what that means is that there's the same amount of funding that would be distributed, and also there would be the same expectations for achieving performance outcomes. And that's really critical when you think about evaluating the impact of public dollars. In our current system, we have a lot of different pathways to take advantage of school choice. And I would say they're actually more expansive than most other states allow. This proposal is managing school choice in a way that is ensuring high levels of accountability and also equity, and being intentional about positioning school choice in a way that's strengthening public schools, so that we're intentional about building an ecosystem that works. And where there may not be a public school available, and districts have relied on independent schools to provide that service, and they're doing a great job providing that, particularly at the high school level, that would continue. But the intent here is, again, shared accountability, clarity around the resources, and strengthening the entire public education system.
Secretary Saunders, before we have to wrap up, I want to make sure we get to a question submitted by our Vermont Public Education reporter, Lola Dufour. It's about the administration's proposed foundation formula. Democrats have been very critical of the numbers and the methodology that was used to create this foundation formula. In part, they've noted that your figures assume only one computer per every third child, when only one computer for every child has been the norm for years now. What do you make of these critiques?
Yeah, I think the critique is interesting because our proposal is building off of the study that the General Assembly commissioned. The General Assembly commissioned Pikus and Auden, national researchers, to propose an education funding approach for Vermont. They used an evidence-based model, and I think the criticism of that evidence-based model when it was first produced back in the fall was that it wasn't, it had not been adjusted for the Vermont context. So what we did in our work is we recommended adjustments to that evidence-based model based on national trends and also specifically what we heard from the Listen and Learn Tour. So we made adjustments in adding additional opportunities for middle school acceleration and college and career and adding support for mental health and behavioral intervention needs. All of those are the things we heard from Vermonters and our teachers were really important to our system. And then we thought about how that could be delivered at scale to achieve the level of quality. So I think that the approach is really grounded in the initial study that the General Assembly put out has been adjusted for the Vermont context. And another thing that's really important to note is that there's a lot of flexibility with how the funding can be spent. So it's important that when the state determines a funding formula, they can guarantee that that amount will ensure students have a robust and well-rounded education. And so we used a research-based approach to really outline all of the inputs that were part of that. But there's a lot of flexibility. So it is not requiring for the districts to implement to a T every assumption that is built into the model. It gives the latitude for the school board and the superintendent to make adjustments that are going to best meet the needs of the local community. So in your example, if they're really interested in having a one-to-one technology, that's something those adjustments can be made within that funding formula, and it's generous enough to allow for that. That what we have also shared are...
We only have about 20 seconds left here, Secretary.
Okay. Sure. And I was just going to mention that that flexibility is something important to look at. And we produced a model of how you could budget using a prototypical budget. We're providing more input that's specific to these five districts just to show the level of customization that can be made within the amount and the generous funding that is available to support education and meet unique needs of local communities.
Vermont's Education Secretary, Zoe Saunders. Secretary, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.